Welcome to episode 43 of the Burning Bush Podcast, where we share the message of the Bible while enjoying a good cigar. Appreciate you stopping by this week. Hope everybody's doing well. And this week I am smoking the H. Upman Media Noche in the Toro size 6x54. I checked online to see if they had anything on their website, and they do not. I believe they're sold by Altadis, and they don't have much information, so I'm going to go to the old backup, Cigars International, and read you the description from there. The Dark Side of Upman. The third installment in the Media Noche family comes compliments of H. Upman, a storied brand with over 170 years of cigar-making tradition. This rich, delicious blend brings the flavor in spades, leading to an extremely balanced Maduro profile you'll always remember. Crafted with an oily, dark Pennsylvania broadleaf Maduro wrapper and a well-blended ensemble of Dominican long fillers, H. Upman Media Noche delivers a sweet, chewy profile filled with nuances of oak, leather, espresso, and a delicious, smoky, sweet finish. Medium in body, but layered with flavor, this well-balanced blend is smooth and satisfying down to the last puff. And it is a medium strength. Comes in, well, I'll get to the wrapper. Wrapper is Pennsylvania broadleaf. Binder is Dominican. Filler is Dominican. And the vitolas are Robusto 5x54 and Toro 6x54. Like I said, those are the only ones mentioned on Cigars International. I know this cigar's been out for a few years, I believe, so those are probably the only two sizes it comes in. Like I said, I couldn't find any information on their website, the Altadis website, which I believe is who sells the H. Upman, if I'm not mistaken. But there it is, this week's cigar, the H. Upman Media Noche. Check it out. Really, really nice smoke. So if you've been listening for the last couple of weeks, you know we were finishing up Dr. Mike Heiser's book, What Does God Want? And you're probably waiting with bated breath, as I told you that I would be letting you know where we'd be going after that, what we would be getting into. And so here is the big reveal. Now we're going to be reading through a book by Dr. Justin Bass. It's called The Bedrock of Christianity, The Unalterable Facts of Jesus' Death and Resurrection. And Dr. Bass, I came to be familiar with him because if you've been listening to the podcast for any length of time, you know that Dr. Mike Heiser, who teaches at the Awakening School of Theology, which I attend, came down with pancreatic cancer a few months back. So Dr. Bass stepped in to take over the teaching duties for him. And that's how I became familiar with Dr. Bass. And he has a couple of books out, and one of them was The Bedrock of Christianity. So I picked it up and read through it, and I think it's a really great resource for laying a foundation for the historical reliability of Jesus, for Jesus Christ and who he was, who he is, and for the resurrection and the fact that he is an actual historical person. So it lays all that out. So I just thought, you know, if you went through what does God want with me, then that lays a foundation for an overview of the Bible and you know, your basic tenets of the faith and things of that nature. So this is sort of a natural progression, the next step in your journey through the Bible and coming to faith and, you know, gaining knowledge about the scriptures and about Jesus Christ. So I asked Dr. Bass if he minded if we read through his book, and he said sounded like a great idea. So with that, I'm going to read the foreword and the introduction and another short piece before we get into the meat of the book. So let me start with the foreword. There are many things said about Jesus, just as there are many often conflicting views about him. So where should one start in thinking about him and his significance? How do we sort out the range of things claimed about him? A myth? A religious great? A misguided revolutionary? A model of piety? A deceiver? A blasphemer? A Christ? Or a son of God? That is where this work comes in. Justin Bass has asked, why not start with what is not so debated and what we know about him? Christianity has uniquely been a religion about core events and claims centered in a singular person. Bass explores what that view means, where it came from, how far back it can be traced, and what that could well mean. It is a helpful starting point to sort out the cacophony of claims about Jesus. The bedrock of Christianity takes you on a journey. You will learn much about what we know about Jesus and central claims coming from the earliest Christian faith. It involves travel through ideas, history, and archaeology. It is also more. It asks basic questions about how far back these ideas go. Were they late ideas, fabricated to bring hope to a sad tragedy of an untimely death of a curious, distant ancient figure? Do they parallel anything else we have seen in history? How did this core history change the direction of the way our world sees life? How do we even know what was core and early? How did such a backwater movement emerge from a handful of quote-unquote believers with no social or political power to become such a global presence? Above all, why do any of these questions matter? The question about the bedrock of Christianity is really a query about the nature of our lives and their purpose. So this history ultimately entails a deeply personal story, a claim that the Creator God intentionally entered into our world as one of us to show us the way to life and meaning. Heaven came down to earth and left footprints on the ground, laying a bedrock we can trace. In that bedrock are the core early claims of Christian faith, and the personal story claiming to come from God aims to become our story as well, giving sense and direction to how we see life. It is in the history treated here that we start to see our own story. To get there, we need to take a careful look at the basis for whether Jesus' story matters or not. We need to know whether that account is merely a story or something more solid. With Justin Bass as a qualified guide, you might not only get answers to such questions, but you might find yourself in the middle of God's story, just as have many others throughout history. Daryl L. Bach, Senior Research Professor of New Testament Studies, Dallas Theological Seminary. Horatio, O day and night, but this is wondrous strange. Hamlet, and therefore, as a stranger, give it welcome. There are more things in heaven and earth, Horatio, than are dreamt of in your philosophy. William Shakespeare, Hamlet, Act 1, Scene 5. Introduction. Suppose that a Catholic, a Protestant, a Jew, and an agnostic, all honest historians, cognizant of first century religious movements, were locked up in the bowels of the Harvard Divinity School Library. John P. Meyer, A Marginal Jew. This sounds like the beginning of a joke, but it is actually a thought experiment from New Testament scholar John Meyer. He begins the first of his multi-volume work on the historical Jesus, asking his audience to imagine this group of learned scholars from a wide range of diverse backgrounds in worldviews and religions, trying to hammer out an agreement on who the historical Jesus was, what he said, and what he did. The goal of this book, The Bedrock of Christianity, is similar, but even bolder. instead of just a few scholars from different backgrounds, imagine all scholars alive today who are teaching in the relevant fields of ancient history, classics, and biblical studies from universities and seminaries across the world, locked up in the Harvard Divinity School Library until they can form a consensus on the facts concerning Jesus and early Christianity. Could they find agreement? Yes. This book will show you where they all agree. To illustrate how incredible this agreement among scholars is, we only need to look at the myriads on myriads of facts and stories about Jesus and early Christianity they do not agree on. The annual meeting of the Society of Biblical Literature contains the largest gathering of such scholars in the world. There are currently over 8,500 members from over 80 countries. These members are from a widely diverse group of backgrounds and worldviews: Jewish, Protestant, Catholic, agnostic, atheist, liberal, and conservative. To paraphrase John 21:25, if all that they disagreed on were written down in detail, I suppose that even the whole world would not be able to contain the books that would be written. And yet, the bedrock facts laid out in this book concerning Jesus and early Christianity have virtually unanimous consensus among the thousands of scholars who are associated with the Society of Biblical Literature and who teach and publish in the relevant fields. This is truly extraordinary. An absurd aberration. Before I get into the main argument of the book, though, let me illustrate how nearly unanimous scholars are in affirming these bedrock facts by dealing with the first and most foundational fact: Jesus existed. Establishing this bedrock fact from the outset is key, since if Jesus did not exist, he probably would not be able to do anything else in history either. That Jesus existed is virtually undisputed among scholars teaching in the relevant fields of ancient history, classics, and biblical studies. In conversation, I prefer to say all scholars believe Jesus existed, but in order to be precise, I say here virtually all, 99%. For an analogy, it is right to say that the historical fact that over 6 million Jews were murdered in the Holocaust of World War II is agreed on by all scholars of history today, even if a handful of Holocaust deniers happen to have scholarly credentials. If we are being precise, however, we must say that 99% of scholars agree that the Holocaust occurred because of the existence of Holocaust deniers. If we ignore the Holocaust deniers, which I believe historians should, then it could be said that all historians agree that the Holocaust occurred during World War II. Those who deny Jesus' existence are in a similar category. New Testament scholar and historian Robert Van Noorst has discovered that many books and essays, by my count over 100, in the past 200 years have fervently denied the very existence of Jesus. Van Voorst goes on, "Contemporary New Testament scholars have typically viewed their arguments as so weak or bizarre that they relegate them to footnotes or often ignore them completely. Considering that there have been tens of thousands of scholars publishing books and articles about Jesus and early Christianity during the past 200 years, this means that over 99% of scholars have consistently affirmed the historicity of Jesus of Nazareth. Additionally, we have no record of anyone denying the historicity of Jesus before a little over 200 years ago. These handful of scholars, the less than 1%, who have doubted Jesus' existence are known as mythicists. Just as historians of World War II have to deal with or ignore Holocaust deniers, and NASA has to deal with or ignore moon landing deniers, so also biblical scholars and ancient historians have to deal with, but usually ignore, mythicists. Meyer, for example, dismisses G.A. Wells, who was a professor of German and the leading mythicist proponent in the 20th century, in a single footnote, saying Wells's book, which builds its arguments on, quote, unsubstantiated claims, may well be allowed to stand as a representative of a whole type of popular Jesus book that I do not bother to consider in detail. New Testament scholar and an agnostic himself, Bart Ehrman, has rightly noted that virtually all mythicists identify as atheist or agnostic. In 2014, at a meeting for the Freedom From Religion Foundation, Ehrman delivered an intellectual spanking to a mythicist after he challenged the historical existence of Jesus. Once you get out of your conclave, there's nobody who thinks this. This is not even an issue for scholars of antiquity. There is no scholar of any college or university in the Western world who teaches classics, ancient history, New Testament, early Christianity, any related field who doubts that Jesus existed. I think atheists have done themselves a disservice by jumping on the bandwagon of mythicism because, frankly, it makes you look foolish to the outside world. If that's what you're going to believe, you just look foolish. You just look foolish. Ehrman also wrote a book called Did Jesus Exist? That hurt a lot of mythicist feelings. In it, he wrote about mythicism's modern origins. The idea that Jesus did not exist is a modern notion. It has no ancient precedents. It was made up in the 18th century. One might well call it a modern myth, the myth of the mythical Jesus. He concludes, Jesus existed, and those vocal persons who deny it do so not because they have considered the evidence with the dispassionate eyes of the historian, but because they have some other agenda that this denial serves. From a dispassionate point of view, there was a Jesus of Nazareth. Jesus certainly did exist. Even mid-20th century German scholar Rudolf Bultmann, who is famous for his attempt to demythologize almost everything about Jesus and the New Testament, wrote this. Of course, the doubt as to whether Jesus really existed is unfounded and not worth refutation. No sane person can doubt that Jesus stands as founder behind the historical movement whose first distinct stage is represented by the Palestinian community. You heard it from Bultmann himself. Mythicists are insane. But even though mythicism was murdered long ago by a brutal gang of facts, social media and the internet have given it new life. In the scholarly community, however, nothing has changed since Van Voorst's comment in 2000. The theory of Jesus non-existent is now effectively dead as a scholarly question. To be clear, it is not the affirmation of experts that confirms the Holocaust occurred, or that Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin walked on the moon, or that Jesus existed. It is the robust historical evidence and facts. Within 100 years of his death, primary sources for the existence of Jesus include Paul's early letters, Matthew, Mark, Luke and Acts, and John. Jewish historian Josephus, Roman historians Tacitus and Suetonius, and Roman governor Pliny the Younger. After more than 200 years of historical and biblical criticism, the careful evaluation of such evidence for Jesus and early Christianity on the part of experts from all different backgrounds and worldviews has led to this overwhelming 99% consensus, despite a handful of mythicist hecklers. In short, Jesus of Nazareth most certainly did exist. And we'll end there for this week. I hope you enjoyed that, and hope that whet your appetite for where we're heading. we'll start getting into the meat of the subject next week. So thanks again for stopping by, and I hope you'll check out the show notes as well for I have a link there for Justin Bass's website where you can pick up copies of his books, sign up for his email alerts, and check out what he's got going on. He's got a lot of videos and things on there, a bunch of videos actually that I'm going through right now on YouTube, debates and things like that that he's done. Really, really interesting. You'll learn a lot from him. And also check out, of course, the link to this week's cigar and groundworksministries.com for daily Bible studies and devotionals. And check out the Burning Bush podcast merchandise store and pick up some things to help spread the word about the show. I'd appreciate that. And with that, until next week, hope you'll stop by again. Have a great day. Have a great cigar, and God bless.